Part 2. Odyssey. Chapter 20. Across the Shadows. Ultramar Fringes. The Shadow Crusade had left a blight across Ultramar. The 500 worlds would never be the same again. At the farthest reaches beyond the aegis of Macragg and the Empire's Primus worlds, the desolation was at its worst. Out here, in the lawless depths of space, planets still burned. At first, scavengers and less scrupulous rogue traders had flocked to the wake of the war. Every floating wreck had the potential in it for profit. But not every vessel was empty. Some harbored the legionaries left behind once Lorgar had finished his symphony. Bandits of a kind were drawn to the aftermath, renegades against the throne who had banded together for survival. Petty warlords arose, the remnants and cast-offs of the larger and more powerful legions. Most had never even heard of the Shadow Crusade, but flocked like carrion crows to the detritus of it anyway. Some of these lingering traitors still possessed ships, the very vessels the Red Marked were striving so hard to destroy. The scavenging ceased, and an eerie quietude descended upon Ultramar's periphery, pregnant with the potential for violence. Destruction heaped atop destruction, with nothing to explain its cause. Husks of dead ships drifted anchorless and unmourned through the void, their bellies ripped out. Immense capital ships lay torn in half, rotting in silence and darkness. Debris fields that encompassed entire systems had created a vast and near impenetrable labyrinth for the Charybdis to navigate. It was slow going. "Keep her steady. Plasma drives at 3/4 strength," Odyssean calmly ordered the helm. "Come about 20 degrees starboard." They breached the first major debris boundary, a heavy veil of drifting scrap metal amongst a dense asteroid belt. "Aye, sir," Lissa Essenzi replied. Colo Odyssean had the dark pallor of a Hesiod noble born into the navy and an honourable charge as shipmaster. No more than 33 years Terran standard, he was young and had survived his predecessor, Tybalt Oguru, who had died during the flight from Istvan V. A scar ran from Odyssean's left cheek, almost to his nose, by way of reminder. Losing the old man had cut deeply. Tybalt had been like a father to him, but it was far from the worst tragedy Odyssean had ever endured. It had hurt, but it had not left a void in his soul. Another loss, one he tried not to think about, had caused that. Under his right eye, he bore the Nocturnian sigil for courage, the sign of the anvil. His eyes were bright, not red like the legionaries of his death world, but pale green like his mother's. With short dark hair barring a salting of white in his close-cropped beard, he was exceptionally composed and a natural warship captain. Essenzi had survived her previous incumbent also, but she had killed the last helmsman when he had lost his mind prior to the evacuation order and attempted to leave his post for the Saviour pods. She never spoke of it, nor harboured any guilt over the act. It had left her profoundly stern, a burden of duty rather than conscience, ever wary of a similar fate. She was beautiful, a fact Odyssean recognized, with her lightly tanned skin and long crimson hair she wore in a vibrant mohawk typical of Ithonian. Through the sensorium array, Odyssean was maintaining a close watch on a large graveyard of ships currently 56 kilometers away and closing. Their primary heading towards Nocturne had taken them beyond McCrag's boundaries. The Charybdis was entering less well-charted waters. It made Odysseon wary. "How large is that battlefield, Essenzi?" "Vast," she showed him a data slate. Odysseon frowned. He wanted to fly around the graveyard, but a detour of the magnitude required to do that would bring them egregiously off course. According to navigational charts, a mandible point existed just beyond the cluster of dead ships. From there, they could drop into warp space and hope that the ruined storm didn't tear the ship apart. "Circe," Odysseon opened a vox link to their navigator, "I need you prepared as soon as we breach the other side of the debris field. Are you ready?" Circe's voice came back with the strain of concentration. "I am, shipmaster. All is well. Are you planning an early translation into the warp?" It was as if she could read his mind. If they did get into trouble picking their way through the graveyard, if ambushers were lurking and they couldn't fight their way out, it might be the only option. "Let's hope not," he answered honestly, then cut the feed. "Helm," he said, "take us in. Reduce input to the plasma drives, void shields at 20%. Such a low power output to the Charybdis' shields would not unduly strain the ship's reserves, but would act as a useful buffer against any smaller debris they would inevitably come into contact with. Lissa Essenzi complied, and Odysseon watched with satisfaction as the hololith image changed to reflect their defensive status. He eased back into his throne, but looked far from relaxed. "What do we have on sensors?"
"Precious little, I'm afraid," said Essenzi, turning to face the shipmaster. "Radiation is saturating this entire region. We've lost our eyes and ears for the moment."
"Then we shall have to rely on your touch, then, Helm," he smiled. It was meant to be reassuring. Essenzi nodded mutely, returning to her instruments. Odysseon gave a small shrug. It would take more than a warm smile to thaw the protective ice around her. "Nice and slow, Essenzi."
"Aye, sir."
In close, details of the ship graveyard, at first lost on account of how far away it was, began to materialize. Broken sections of sundered ships drifted together with hunks of rock and swathes of glittering particulate. Eventually, this minor flotsam gave way to entire vessels listing serenely, their smashed open portals staring darkly like the dead eyes of corpses. In many ways, they were. Others had been cored out completely, their deaths the result of catastrophic chain reactions, evidenced by what was left of the vessels. Through narrow apertures in the ragged hulls, pockets of crewmen could still be seen drifting. Attached to guide ropes, they had failed to disengage their harnesses before the end, and so would forever dangle like forgotten puppets on loose strings. A vast behemoth of a ship loomed on the starboard side, so large that even several kilometers away it obscured the view farther into the debris field. Huge rents had been torn in its flanks, and its internal superstructure hung open like an abused skeleton. As large as the Charybdis was, it could fly through the gutted remains of this gargantuan hulk, like a minnow through the carcass of a gnarled whale, if carefully navigated. Odysseon ordered Essenzi to take them through. Based on the last sensorium returns, she had already plotted a viable course that fell within acceptable risk parameters. They went in dark, their internal lumens kept low and their power signature to a minimum. Too huge to go around, the massive ship effectively impeded their path. They had to forge through it, but given what could be lurking in the shadows, it was prudent to be cautious. Within its ruptured innards, the hulk was no less impressive.
Huge internal amphitheatres opened up beyond the ship's ruined outer skin. Overhead, split gantries and walkways jutted from the interior like bones. Whatever had befallen this behemoth, little more than a shell remained. Through one hall, entire battle companies of legionaries were locked in combat, flash frozen during a final engagement. Bodies clad in cobalt blue and crimson, each rimed in hoar frost, began to drift in the wake of the Charybdis's passage. Some impacted against the shields, shattering into fragments. Others maintained their eternal struggle, hands wrapped around throats, blades impaled in icy bodies, bolters extended for a killing salvo. Odysseus knew all space marines were genetically engineered to resist the degrading effects of the void, but even legionaries could not do so indefinitely. Something terrible must have transpired here, a conflict so bitter it had driven those in it to keep fighting until they froze solid. There was a grim serenity to it all.
"Such is the fate of all warriors," said a deep voice from behind the shipmaster's throne that made every man of the crew jerk suddenly. "Or so we would wish it."
Recovering his composure, Odysseus turned to face a legionary in dark scale green. "Sergeant Zetos," he said, bowing slightly, even though this was his bridge. "I did not hear you enter." Zetos's fiery gaze had alighted on the captured feed relayed on the picked screens in front of the helm.
"Apologies, shipmaster. I noticed the Charybdis was on all silent, so I considered it best to adopt a similar approach."
"Prudent."
"I thought so." Zetos gestured to the visual feed. "What am I looking at, shipmaster?"
Suddenly alert, Odysseus rapidly brought up whatever data the Charybdis had in its internal cogitators. "Records indicate it's a 17th Legion vessel that exceeds Gloriana-class displacement. Beyond that, there's nothing further known about it."
"She's a beast," muttered Zetos.
"Indeed, sire."
"What do you think happened to her?"
"Judging by the intense radiation levels, I'd say a warp engine detonation." Zetos looked on grimly at the bodies that kept showing up on the visuals. Amongst the dead of the 13th and the 17th, he saw Iron and Raven Black, even Drake Green. Not all of the legionaries who had reached Ultramar had got as far as Macragge. Some miracles had no heroic finale. They merely ended in death. Dreadnoughts and the shells of Legiones Astartes gunships thickened the grisly throng with bulk and mass.
"What else is out here, beyond the dead?" Zetos wondered out loud.
Odysseus had no answer. None amongst the crew did, so silence answered for them. After several minutes during which those on the bridge were allowed to marvel at the sheer majesty of the ship they were literally travelling through, the Charybdis emerged from the gargantuan wreck. Far off in the distance, a star died, and the resultant solar flare cast the void around them in a dull amber glow. It also revealed a ship at low anchor hiding in the umbral side of a small moon.
"What by throne is that?" asked Odysseus, just as the sensorium feed cleared and a beacon alert sounded.
Essenzi triangulated the signal.
"It's an Imperial distress code. Signal originates from an installation 381 kilometers away and closing."
"Magnify." The visual feed zoomed in dramatically, displaying a small planetoid-based station comprised of geodesic domes and several large drilling rigs. Isolated as it was, it must have avoided the void war, but with the cessation of the conflict had now come under scrutiny.
"Its designation is Rampart. Civilian. Looks like a refueling depot."
"And the ship attempting to mask its presence behind that moon?" asked Odysseus, forgetting the legionary on his bridge whilst he went about his duty.
Light cruiser, Gladius class. Recently disgorged landers.
Headed to Rampart.
Aye, sir.
Odysseus quickly checked the cruiser's designation.
Necrotor. The 14th Legion, then.
Death Guard, said Zetos, before Odysseus could read it off the hololith. How many?
Odysseus frowned. Sergeant?
Zetos's face was set like granite as he turned to the shipmaster. Landers, how many of them?
Essenzi quickly provided the answer.
Three, my lord.
I'm not your lord. Don't call me that again. Refer to my rank.
Essenzi flushed, chastened. She fought not to tremble before the legionary's annoyance.
Duly noted, Sergeant Zetos.
Zetos didn't acknowledge her. He was already leaving the bridge.
Have a Thunderhawk ready in the launch bays, he said as he departed. My brothers and I will be there presently. Zathen, he began, now using his suit's internal vox. Sergeant!
Odysseus's call made Zetos stop and turn just before the doors to the bridge.
You have something further to add, shipmaster?
He had already unclasped his helmet and had it ready in his left hand.
Our mission, the nature of these ruins beyond the heart of Ultramar. There could be anything out there, and the longer we delay...
Confronted by the sergeant's hellish glare, Odysseus trailed off.
All I mean to ask is... Is this wise?
No, it isn't. But I won't ignore my duty for the sake of prudence.
Zetos turned and was gone.
Three lenders, Zathen considered. Even if we took the entire cadre, we'd still probably be outnumbered.
That's why we won't, Zathen. We reconnoitre and vox for reinforcements if needed.
Those lenders are gunships. Could be 30 suits of plate in each one.
We can't ignore it. And we can't risk more legionaries.
Zetos glanced at Zathen.
You see my problem, then.
The veteran nodded. He walked in lockstep with Zetos, priming and preparing a small arsenal.
After Zathen had racked the slide of his Phobos pattern bolter to ensure the breach was clear, he then checked the loadout of his two sidearms, a hand flamer and a bolt pistol with sickle magazine. He carried three blades, two combat knives, one serrated, one single-edged, and a shortened cascara, which he strapped horizontally across his back. A flame gauntlet, the signature weapon of a pyroclast, encased his right hand.
Are you sure you're well enough equipped, brother?
Zetos asked, but his mild sarcasm was lost on the veteran.
I had considered adding a Volkite,
Zathen replied, adjusting his weapons belt on the move.
And I can modify the Phobos pattern so it'll accommodate an underslung launcher. Should I go back?
Zetos shook his head, relieved that his smile was hidden behind the snarl of his helmet's faceplate. Like all of the 66, his armor had a draconic aspect. Even their greaves and breastplates were scalloped at the edges like scales. Drake mantles were pinned to gnarled-looking shoulder guards. Most of these cloaks were burned and torn up a little, much like their wearers. It was a small force that descended on Rampart, but a battle-hardened one. They lacked a single element.
Where's Numeon? I can't reach him on the vox, asked Zetos.
They were nearer the vertical conveyor that would take them down as far as the landing bay, and he had expected word from the pyre's leader before now.
Where do you think?
I see.
Zetos had seen precious little of Numeon since their departure from Macrag. The captain preferred to spend his waking hours with the dead rather than the living, it seemed.
Is he alone?
Zetos asked.
Vakir's with him.
Have our chaplain tell the captain his presence is needed.
We could let him be, suggested Zathen. Don't misunderstand. I would rather he be with us, but you and I can lead this sortie to Rampart.
I know, brother, but dragging Numeon from that tomb is not for our benefit. It's for his.
How long have you been here?
Asked Numeon. His head was bowed, and he crouched down on one knee. His outstretched hand touched the lid of the casket.
"Not as long as you."
Varkir stepped from the shadows into the small storage chamber. It had been stripped of supplies and equipment. Only Vulcan's casket was harbored in it now, secured in the deeps of the ship where it could remain largely undisturbed. No memorial flame cast illumination onto the chaplain's aging countenance as he came into the light, but rather a phosphor loom hanging overhead and swaying in the gentle susurrations emitted by the atmospheric recyclers.
"Keeps it cold," said Numeon, gesturing to the boxed turbines as he stood up to meet the chaplain's interrogating gaze. "Are you trying to interpret me as you might a flame, Varkir?"
"No need to. Everything you are feeling is right in front of me, Artellus."
"Is that so?"
He glanced down to look upon his father. Vulcan slumbered still, hands clenched around the Warhammer Dawnbringer, and the Fulgurite jutting from his chest like a poison lance.
"You fear he will rise again?"
Numeon frowned, nonplussed.
"Why would I fear that?"
"You fear you will not be here to witness it."
"Do I need to bear witness? Is that what your insight tells you, Varkir?"
Varkir bowed his head at the sudden anger in Numeon's tone.
"I meant no offense, merely to offer an observation." "I am told our father is dead, that he was slain by an assassin's dagger, a blade that sits in him still.
And you think by removing it, Vulcan will regenerate?"
"He survived atmospheric re-entry onto Makrag," said Numeon. "Yes, I think he will live if we can take out the Fulgurite. He could even excise it himself."
"Have you tried to remove it?"
Numeon nodded, calmer. "I have."
"Since we came aboard the Charybdis?" Another nod. Varkir's brow furrowed as he noticed the blood dripping down from Numeon's hands. He had laid his gauntlets and helm to one side. The vox feed in the latter had been disengaged.
"How many times?" "Every day."
Now he shook his head, despairing.
"But it never yields."
"It won't, ever. Not to strength, brother."
"Then what about will or belief?"
"You think if you believe strongly enough, Vulcan will come back to us?"
"And if I am alone in that, then my will shall have to be enough."
For a moment, Varkir was lost for words. "I am with you, Artellus. We all are. Vulcan shall return to Nocturne, but it is to be laid to rest, not revivified."
"Don't you believe in immortality, Varkir? In rebirth? Isn't that what the Circle of Fire preaches?"
"The dead do not come back, Artellus. I am not saying this to you as your chaplain, but as your brother and friend. Do not cling to this poisonous obsession. It will destroy you."
Numeon scowled as his ambivalent feelings fought for supremacy in his expression.
He opened his hands to the chaplain. The wounds on his palms and fingers were shallow but many. The gesture was symbolic.
"Help me, Varkir, please."
"Tell me, what can I do, brother?" Intense emotion flashed through Numeon's eyes. It was frightening to see.
"Believe."
The vox crackle in Varkir's helm came as welcome relief to the chaplain. He listened. Numeon watched. Their eyes met as the message ended, cold glass lenses to crimson sclera. Numeon spoke first.
"What is it, brother?"
"Our duty, Artellus." A solitary gunship speared from the Charybdis' starboard launch bays, its engines glowing dully and without flame as they powered the warriors on board to Rampart. Its name was Draconis. Odysseon had withdrawn the Charybdis back into the radiation field to mask her presence from the Necrotor. No outward signs from the Death Guard ship suggested they had been detected. At full burn, it was a short flight to the installation. 12 legionaries sat in the gunship's hold, arming themselves and preparing for whatever awaited them. The light was low, indicating imminent combat insertion. An odd serenity fell across the warriors within, for the void offered up no turbulence. 18 minutes had elapsed since they had received the distress beacon signal. Zathen maintained watch on the chrono inside his visor.
If they are Death Guard, it won't matter what defenses Rampart has. It won't take them more than half an hour to breach, kill everyone on that station, and retrieve whatever it is they came for.
Then hope we arrive to stop them before that happens, said Zetos.
He had a bolter mag clamped to his armor's power generator, but favored a deactivated thunder hammer sat across his lap.
Ushaman, he asked the epistolary, who sat apart from the others on the opposite side of the hold to Zetos.
The librarian had closed his eyes to focus on the arcane. It had been a significant time since Ushaman had used the art. In Imperium Secundus, Gilliman had reinstated the Librarius with Titus Prato at its head. Psychic abilities were weapons. Only the user mattered, not the weapon itself. Such thinking had come about through necessity rather than invention. In spite of all that, Ushaman had held on. He had been a student of Rustan before the massacre and had clung to the tenets of his master long after his death. Abstention, denial of power, was the Emperor's will. Only recently had Ushaman begun to do otherwise. Pragmatism superseded duty, for it in itself served duty.
There is fear, many lives, he murmured to his brothers in a strange, resonant undertone, as if he were speaking from beneath the ocean. Zathen nudged Zetos. I thought this place was a refueling depot.
Our cousins react with aggression, Ushaman continued. Amongst his many talents, he was an excellent telepath and tried to home in on the emotional backwash emanating from Rampart through the warp to his carefully trained mind.
Reckless hate, I feel.
Ushaman shuddered in his restraints, hands clenching and unclenching with sudden effort. His face was a tapestry of pain as he fought to grasp a tendril of emotion.
Something toxic.
Psychic abilities were like springs. They could rust through lack of use.
Save us, he cried out in a voice not his own. Throne of Earth, please help us. Angel of the Emperor, help!
The voice cut out abruptly, but Ushaman kept shaking, convulsing against his harness. His fingers splayed out like knives, and something crackled brightly from their tips in the dingy hold.
It has them, he murmured. A taint. It claws at my skull. Unearths Kabar. I cannot.
There was the hard crack of a gauntleted blow to the head, and Ushaman fell forwards, held limply in his seat like a broken doll. Egan Gargo stood over him, mag locked to the deck. The white-haired black smiter rotated his shoulder, then returned to his seat in the hold.
Was that necessary? Asked Zathen, gesturing to the unconscious librarian. He's out cold. We might need him. He could have destroyed this entire ship. Besides, you're missing the point, Rekor, Gargo replied. He said, Angel of the Emperor, whilst channeling a soul from Rampart. He said a lot of things, replied Zathen. That part about taint, for instance. And who is Kabar? The soul he channeled, it doesn't matter. It means we could have an ally down there, said Gargo. He jerked his arm, stretching it out and back 3 times. Zathen leaned over. Still having trouble, Black Smiter?
Gargo looked about to give Zathan some trouble of his own when he was interrupted.
Ushaman's borrowed words mean nothing, said Numeon, leaning forwards as far as his restraint would allow. Assume nothing, brothers. Our enemies are below and will try to deceive us if they can.
Gargo lowered his gaze, but Zathan appeared enthused and smiled belligerently behind his helm. Everyone in the hold could hear it in his voice.
I could not agree more, Captain. Give no quarter, for none shall be given in return.
Zetos opened a private feed to Zathan.
A little belligerent, brother,
he murmured in a sub-vocalized tone, augmented by his helm, then translated and magnified for Rekor Zathan.
If I didn't know better, I'd say you were relishing the fight more than your duty to these civilians.
Zathan was typically dismissive.
If they're dead, which is likely, it is a mission of vengeance, not salvation, we undertake.
Which would you prefer?
Zathan had the strength of character not to lie.
Either.
What happened to your concern over numerical superiority?
I never cared about that, Zetos. I just want to kill our betrayers.
Some wounds went too deep to salve, Zetos realized. Not coincidentally, his eye was drawn to Numeon at the thought. He had left open the feed, and as Zathan followed Zetos's gaze, he asked,
Is he ready for this?
Gargo informs me his physical rehabilitation was excessive.
Zetos looked askance at Zathan as he realized something.
And didn't you spend countless sessions in the battle cages with him?
Oh, he fights like a mean bastard still, but I'm not talking about his physical wounds.
Even amongst brothers, Numeon appeared withdrawn and distant. His mind seemed elsewhere.
Either he is or he falls, here on Rampart,
Zetos stated and cut the feed, but it could not mask his doubt. An angel of the Emperor had come to Rampart, and he alone fought the Death Guard. Whoever he was, he would not be alone for long.